Hey, everybody, I just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com.
Hello and welcome to the Inside Transportation Podcast, a production of Inside.com. We are back for season two of our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino, and as always, I am joined here by my co-host, Inside.com CEO, angel investor, and podcaster, Jason Calcanis. What a week, huh?
It was an interesting week. To be sure, it's 2021, and we thought it would get nice and easy breezy, and we'd have a very slow start to the year. And obviously, it's not a political podcast, but things, the 2021 started out with a bang, to be sure.
Yes, but yes.
Hard to focus, isn't it? It's hard to focus.
Very hard to focus, but you know what? The show must go on, Jason.
And they do say that, don't they?
Yeah, the show must go on. The world continues, even though we're going through all of this. So, But I'm very excited to have our guest on today.
Super excited.
Yeah, many of you may have heard of Revel, one of the most exciting micromobility startups in the transportation industry right now. They were founded in New York City in 2018, and they operate in a handful of cities around the United States. Today, we're joined by Frank Rieg, who is the co-founder and CEO of Revel. He has experience as a VP at Gerson Lehmer Group, where he served as the head of energy, industrials, and real estate. Fun fact, he's actually also a graduate from the Culinary Institute of America.
What?
Yeah. Although he's also a Columbia University graduate and served as a fellow at MIT's Climate Co-Lab. So we're super pleased to have Frank on our podcast today. Frank, how's it going?
Gentlemen, thanks so much for having me.
And Frank, are you the founder of Revel? Were you the original founder or did you come in as a CEO?
No, Jason, I am the original founder.
The original founder?
Had the idea in about January 2018. And over the last 3 years have built Revel to about, you know, six markets, over 6,000 mopeds, and super excited for what 2021 brings.
Yeah, I'm curious about your career shift from chef to CEO. Tell us how that happened and what you've seen the parallels are between being a chef in a, you know, high-stress restaurant and running a startup.
Yeah, I think, my path to electric mobility is definitely an unusual one. After my undergraduate years, I think maybe it's a trait of a lot of founders is you take risk and you do what you want to do. And you don't worry about what other people think. And here I am, I graduated college and I loved food. I loved cooking. And so I decided to do that. Ended up doing the one-year program at the Culinary Institute of America. And then I ended up working in high-end New York City restaurants for close to 4 years. Places like
what restaurants
Tavern,
did you work in?
Gramercy Tavern.
Oh, Gramercy Tavern? Oh, that was my favorite in New York. I love the souffle. I used to eat at the bar. What did they call the front part of the house?
It's the Tavern Room.
The Tavern Room. I used to do my meetings in the Tavern Room all the time in New York.
It's really a beautiful space, beautiful
18th
restaurant.
18th Street? Where is it? 20th Street?
20th Street.
20th Street, right. Yeah. Great restaurant.
And you know, I also worked in other places like Cafe Belude, for those that know Daniel Belude, that chef, Did that for about 4 years, and maybe just answering your question directly, I think a lot of the skills I learned in Noah's Kitchens translates really well to what I do running a fast-growing company, which is having controlled chaos day in and day out. And of course, all those skills like hustle, hard work. I think a restaurant kitchen is one of the most accountable workplaces there could ever be. There are no excuses. So sort of bringing that culture to a fast-growing startup, again, I think it's done me wonders. But I sort of had other careers between working in restaurants and starting Revel. As you mentioned in the introduction, I ended up going back to Columbia for a master's in public policy. You know, at that time I was thinking I wanted to get into government and politics. I ended up using that degree to get a job at the World Trade Center Redevelopment Office for the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. So that was like 2013, 2014, really a front row seat to how the sausage is made from a probably the most political real estate site in the entire world, I would argue, especially in that time frame. Yeah. You know, between the governors calling my boss.
So how did you come up with the idea for Revel?
The idea for Revel is really a couple of things. I would say, you know, as a, you know, little kid growing up here in New York City, you know, my dad is a car mechanic. And I remember rebuilding a moped with him when I was 8 or 9 years old. We found it on the side of the street. Somebody was throwing it out, and we spent 2 months rebuilding. And here I was as a nine-year-old, you know, riding this little moped up and down my block for hours on end, right? So I think the love started at a very early age. I think also working in restaurants in New York City, getting out of your shift at 1, 2 a.m., nobody likes to take the subway at 2 a.m. in New York City. It's awful. Maybe you got to wait half an hour if it even comes. So always riding my bike, anything on two wheels, that's how I got to work. That's what I always did. So I sort of fell in love with two-wheeled mobility in the city at that point. And then in January 2018, I just come back from a long overseas trip in South America. And everywhere I went, you know, it's the summer down there, mopeds are a thing, right? And any place I've ever been internationally, mopeds are a thing, whether it's Asia, Europe,
Spain,
rich, poor,
France,
doesn't matter.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's the best vehicle to get around an urban environment.
So
here I am back in New York City.
I think it's important to pause on that. Why is a moped, specifically a 49cc or less, 30 mile an hour max, you know, Vespa, as some people might think of them, why is that in your mind, and I happen to agree with you, the best way to get around a city?
I think one of the biggest reasons is it solves just this middle mile trip. Meaning it's not just last mile. It's not just something you pick up on a street corner and go 0.7 miles with to get to your, you know, your final destination. This is something you can go 0.7 miles with, 7 miles with, 4 miles with, and it's just as comfortable to use and to handle, depending on the length of that trip. So it's really any sort of trip you need to make within an urban environment. Again, whether it's last mile or 7 miles, it works, right? And it has all the benefits of a bike or a kick scooter in that you can park it pretty much anywhere. And from a regulatory perspective, it's a motor vehicle, right? So you ride and park in the street. You don't have that sort of gray area that so many city environments have with these other forms of mobility.
Ah, so when you're on a scooter or a bicycle, can you be on the sidewalk? Can you be in the street? It's always this, and we've had this debate, Johan, on the program many times. Like, what is actually
where
the
does
law?
It go?
You know, yeah, and like people are like, you should really ride your bike on the street and on the sidewalk. And then people are like, why are you riding your bike on the sidewalk? And you know, how you ride your bike on the sidewalk could be the issue, or which sidewalk? Because some sidewalks, like Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, that's a no go. But you know, if you were in Santa Monica and you're driving down 18th Street, you probably want to be. You know, doing this, you know, on the sidewalk, because it's just safer for everybody, including the cars and yourself.
I mean, I'm in this industry, Jason. Yeah. Oh, sorry, I was going to say, I mean, I'm obviously in this industry, and sometimes when I go to a city like Washington, D.C., and I use one of the kick scooter apps to go somewhere, even me, I'm like, where am I allowed to
what
ride
is
this?
The law? Yeah, what I loved about it was...
I don't even know.
I had a Vespa in New York when I lived in New York in the late 90s. And what I loved about it was, and this is not, I'm not advocating this, but man, when I had them, it was like a little bit lawless in New York, and we would park these things on the, I was watching the bike messengers back in the day, and they all had hooks and Velcro on their license plates, and we would all park you know, on 57th Street and 5th Avenue on the sidewalk. And then you'd see the bike messengers and they would rip their license plate off so they couldn't get tickets and then go drop stuff off. And then we had moves like you could, if you were going down the wrong way street, like a West Street, you could just jump off your scooter and walk it and get to the, you know, sort of, you could efficiently get around the city. But what I loved about it most in Spain or in New York City, Manhattan or Brooklyn is it was just a delightful speed to go around the city. Biking too slow, you get sweaty, you know, getting in a car, too much traffic, but being able to ride a Vespa or a moped, whatever you want to call it, a scooter, and we're talking here about electric ones specifically, it's just so delightful, the speed of going around the city. Johan, do you ride these at all?
No, I don't. I really do want to ride one, but it's actually really interesting because I noticed that Revel just exited Austin. And one of the reasons you kind of said you exited Austin was because Austin has a, you know, deep car culture and the urban city, there's a less dense urban city core.
That's true.
During the pandemic, I mean, we've seen a lot of city dwellers go to more suburban areas, and we've talked about it on this podcast, like Tahoe and even Austin and you know, do you envision micromobility only working in more in, like urban environments, or is there any case for car culture and micromobility to coexist in the same city? Any thoughts there?
I mean, absolutely, micromobility and car culture can exist in the same city. You know, there have been tons of conversations, and I'm sure you guys have been part of them, around infrastructure and what's required to really help the micromobility culture in a city to essentially take space away from cars. And in many cases, you know, private car parking or car storage, whatever you want to call it,
right?
Especially in a city like New York. I think when you talk about Austin, what was interesting about Austin for us is, you know, it was really a few factors coming together. I think COVID, more than a lot of markets, really hurt our ability to have a profitable business in market because it's such a events tourism town.
Right, right.
And COVID has just killed that. Right. There are no more events in 2021 in Austin. It's just COVID really put a hurt to that market. And then in terms of all of our markets that we're in, from Berkeley, Oakland, San Francisco, DC, Miami, New York, across the four boroughs that we're in, by far it has the highest rates of car ownership. And it also is the least dense of all of our operating areas. So it's just it was a lot of different factors that came together for us to decide to close Austin at the end of this year.
Yeah. What are some other?
What is the business model? What do you charge for the average ride? And then how do customers decide to use a Revel scooter versus, you know, taking a ride sharing ride or driving or biking or taking a non-electric, you know, scooter like a Bird kind of scooter?
So since we launched in 2018, our pricing has been pretty similar over the last 2.5 years. There's an unlock fee and a price per minute. Depending on the market, that can range anywhere from basically 30 to 40 cents in terms of price per minute. And the unlock fee since we launched has been $1. So it's very much an a la carte. The average ride right now is 3.5 miles. That's our average trip. So it gets back to your question.
What is that equal in dollars? Like $4 is the average ride?
No, because, you know, 3.5 miles in a city like New York or DC, that could be a significant amount of traffic or, you know, stoplights or things like that. So that trip can be, you know, $8, $10, $12.
Got it. So $10 ride. And then this would be about the same amount of money for taking an UberX or a Lyft, right? So people are choosing to do this even though it's about the same cost?
Well, in a city like New York, take a 3.5 mile Uber ride in New York, that could easily be $20 or $30. Easily.
For an
that's
Uber
about
X.
Service pricing. For UberX, correct.
Yeah, yeah. So it's half the price of taking an Uber, because what I'm not taking into account is the amount of time it takes because of traffic.
Correct. And also, you know, you mentioned it earlier in this conversation, you have a hell of a lot more fun on a Vespa-type scooter than you do in the backseat of an Uber. Let's just be honest.
Right. So in a city like Uber, a city like Austin, starting to get wonky, because there might not be the same congestion as in Manhattan, a 3 mile ride there in an UberX might be similar because you don't have all that wait time.
And also Austin specifically has a pretty tight downtown core, and then it gets very suburban very quickly. So if our average trip distance across our markets is 3.5 miles, that's not really the trip you need in Austin. In Austin, Austin's more of a kick scooter town. You get to downtown and you hop on that little kick scooter and you go your half mile trip. So it's just, it wasn't just the geography of the city. Plus you had COVID on top of that and the density and the percentage of car ownership. It was just a lot of headwinds for us and obviously a learning.
Right. So question for you. Revel gained attention last year after a few fatal accidents happened on, you know, the company's mopeds when you guys were rolling into New York City. Just to clarify, fatal accidents are not uncommon in micromobility, and it's still way less than the 39,000 people that die each year in car accidents. But from that experience, what did you guys learn from those incidents, and how do you think the industry is going to continue to improve safety?
So for us, this past summer, you go to July 2020, you know, we had done over 10 million miles across our markets. We'd done close to 4 million trips, 3 to 4 million trips at that point. And we had two fatal crashes, I think, in the span of about 2 weeks.
Right.
So a little bit of sort of backdrop for anyone that's listening here. New York City, along with DC, we saw similar behaviors in both cities. They were completely shut down because of COVID for, you know, 8-10 weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, people went inside their apartment in April, May, and March, and just threw the key out unless you're an essential worker. So sort of everyone is in their apartments cooped up. Then you go into early June and cities are starting to open formally. People are starting to move. Everyone's been cooped up. Weather's getting nicer.
Right.
And on top of that, now you have, you know, massive protests in cities and just additional turmoil. I mean, I did not leave New York this entire summer. I was here. I felt it. You walk outside. This summer was unique. And the staff that I talked to a lot with the mayor's office here in New York City and New York City DOT, so that we're all working from the same information. Traffic fatalities in New York City between July 2019 and July 2020, looking at that month, we're up 300%, right? So clearly this is much bigger than a Revel issue. This was a street safety issue, all forms of mobility. There were some issues at the height of this summer.
Now, what do you think that is?
I think it was, you know, the amount of helmet usage really decreased this past summer as we came out of COVID. And I think that was just fears of COVID as we came out of the lockdown. So helmet usage just exponentially decreased. And then the other piece of that was people were cooped up for so long. You have protests in the streets happening in cities like New York, turmoil, and then sort of rider behavior. And again, more than just Revel across all modes, really went pretty erratic in June.
Yeah, Bird was having problems with people going a little YOLO, or people going crazy. I mean, there's a weird thing with technology where we will look at a technology company and we will say, when it's a new company doing something innovative, that they're responsible for consumers' bad behavior. And it's completely unfair, especially in the transportation space. If, you know, Tesla comes out with self-driving, autopilot, and then you see somebody do something completely asinine, like get out of the driver's seat and sit in the passenger seat and then put a clasp. I don't know if you've seen these videos, but they'll put a clasp on the steering wheel or put an orange in it to weight it so that the sensor is tricked into thinking there's somebody in the seat. Yeah. Or they'll put a backpack on the seat to weigh it down so that they can hack the seat sensor. If people do dumb stuff like that, that's on them. There's nothing to do with the company. And we expect tech companies to do better than, you know, I don't know, just a standard company in the transportation space. It's completely unfair. Do you feel you've been held to a standard that's unfair or higher than non-tech companies? And then, you know, what is your take on that?
For us, we can obviously argue that for whatever reason, we had quite the spotlight on us this summer. Unfairly or not. And obviously, we can definitely argue that. At the end of the day, I think it's in our bones, it's in our ethos as a company. We hold ourselves accountable to everything that we do. And I think that goes to show you that after that second fatal crash, we voluntarily paused our service and said to our team, everybody in my entire company, how do we change user behavior? We saw helmet use come down. We saw erratic behavior of riders this past summer. All we know is we need to fix that. That's what we know. And that's what we did.
So you just take ownership of it.
We just took ownership of it because you know what? It's sometimes as a company, you just need to say, this is a problem. All forms of mobility are experiencing that problem. Yes, we have an unfair spotlight. Doesn't matter. We need to hold ourselves accountable and improve that behavior. And we did that over the course of 4 weeks. My entire team, just everyone at it, put together a helmet selfie from scratch. So now every single time you ride Rebel.
Explain what that is and what that did to compliance with helmets.
It exponentially increased compliance immediately.
Explain what it is too. I mean, it's essentially obvious, but I just want to make sure people understand what you did.
Every single time you ride Rebel now as part of the user flow, you need to take a photo of that helmet on your head. Every single time. And if that helmet is not on your head, you'll first get a warning and say, listen, we're not a company that this goes into a black box and isn't looked at. Every single image is. You got one more shot at this.
Got it.
If you do this again, you're permanently suspended.
So literally in real time, they take the picture of themselves with the helmet on, and then somebody in your company or gets an alert, it gets put into a Slack room or something, and it says, is this person wearing a helmet? Yes or no. Did they take a picture of their shoe, or is this a picture of them wearing a helmet? And that increases compliance.
So everything is driven through technology. Mm. But they are allowed to start the ride and go, even if that helmet selfie is a failure, because there is a lag time there. But
so
then they won't be able to take a second ride then, or they're going to get that warning, and then if they do it again, then they're going to be permanently suspended. So I mean, we're
the equivalent. I just want to make it clear to the audience, what a higher standard you're holding yourself to, Frank, and the Revel team.
Absolutely.
This would be as if, Toyota said, everybody, we had a series of people not wearing seatbelts. You know, if we go back 20, 30 years ago, wearing a seatbelt was a controversy for some stupid reason. My dad refused to wear a seatbelt for a decade. It was like, I'd say half the fights I've had with my dad is over
like
wearing a seatbelt in the 80s.
Right?
it was literally that stupid, you know? I mean, literally, you know, I love my dad. Dad, shout out to my dad who's probably listening. But like, we literally got in like brawls over, you know, in the 80s, please, dad, wear a seatbelt. And this would be as if Toyota, Frank, said, in order to, you know, drive your Toyota, we want you to send a picture of yourself with your seatbelt on. Now, obviously, you can take the seatbelt off the second after you send the selfie, just like you could take the helmet off. But at least you're saying we're going to add friction to this process. We're adding friction. We're slowing you down. We're making you think about it. I think this is fantastic what you're doing, Frank. I really do. I think it's a great way to take ownership of it. And I think you're being held to an unfair standard. I'll be totally honest. People understand that car accidents happen. Just like Tesla gets held to a ridiculous standard. Everybody knows that when you have autopilot on, it's a safer ride. And, you know, it's hard to say this, but even people behaving badly using autopilot on a highway are probably, I'm saying this, not Tesla, they're probably safer with the autopilot on and maybe even doing a text than they would be without doing a text and actually driving themselves. That's actually my personal feeling on it, using autopilot every day for 5 years and watching it evolve.
I agree with you, Jason.
You do?
I do, yeah. I mean, I think the technology is getting so good that it's way safer to have someone with the autopilot engaged texting than if you're texting and driving. And I've heard from a lot of Tesla drivers the same opinion. I know we have Frank for just a few more minutes here because he has a hard stop.
Yeah. What are you talking about, Frank? Give us an extra 10. Come on, Frank.
No,
what's more important than this?
Well, maybe you can have him on the list.
It's fine, gentlemen.
Well, here's something I just I wanted you to comment on. It turns out during the pandemic, according to micromobility data, the distances have gone up like 60% in Detroit or 26% overall. Are you seeing during the pandemic more usage or less usage? And is this true that the distances are going up? Because this is across all micromobility companies. I wonder if you're seeing that trend or not. And then I'll throw it to you, Johan, for the final question.
So I think we have to take a little more nuance there, because I've read similar data and I've seen similar reports of this sort of thing. I can tell you from running a company with 6,000 electric mopeds across different markets, when you're coming out of lockdown, so when it was, you know, late May going into June, July, August, September, and case counts were low, trip distances definitely went up. and demand was through the roof. I can tell you that right now. When you're going back into lockdown, like we are right now, and cities are shutting down and people are stopping their movement in cities again, that's not good for any mobility business, micromobility or otherwise. So it's a two-sided story here, Jason. It's as, and we're expecting the same thing this spring, summer, as the vaccine continues to be rolled out, as the weather gets nicer in our seasonal markets, we're expecting a ton of demand come June, July, August again, as we come out of another COVID lockdown.
People are going to be YOLOing. Are people using your scooters for doing delivery services like Uber Eats or Postmates? Like, are those Postmates drivers using your service, and can they like rent it for the day for a reasonable price, or is it just doesn't work out?
Some definitely do use Revel to do delivery. We see it sort of in the data. Why else would they be pausing, you know, 25 times during their ride? I think right now the pricing, it's hard to support it, right? Because the delivery market has such low margins, tight margins, and everybody wants everything for free. So it's hard to make money off those users. So for us, it's not an area we're aggressively pursuing.
So closing things out here, Frank, and thank you for giving us your time. This was an amazing talk, a little bit shorter than our normal interviews, but what's your long-term vision for Revel? Do you see yourselves going beyond just mopeds into maybe even, you know, short-term electric vehicle rentals? Like, what's the vision there?
I will say that we are absolutely thinking through our product strategy beyond mopeds, and there will be more to come in the future. So we've started out as an e-moped company. We've grown that business. We've gotten really good at it. We understand how to make money from it. Now we need to grow our platform. So, more announcements to come in 2021, but it's definitely part of the plan. I think another way I can answer that question is everything Revel does is backed up with infrastructure and on the ground operations. A lot of folks in the mobility industry try and push that off to somebody else, whether it's a gig economy. Right. We don't want to do any infrastructure. We don't want to own the vehicles. We don't want to operate the fleet. Everything we do takes the exact opposite approach. I would say more the Amazon approach. Yes, we have the tech platform. We have the brand. We own the user.
And you guys don't have contractors too, which is another thing I saw.
Yeah, absolutely not. No interest in the gig economy. I don't think that's something we ever want to touch. But everything we do
need
is
to
back
have people go collect the scooters and charge them, right? Because they're electric. So that is the operational complexity of your business, is where do you leave these things and going and charging them up, right?
Correct. I mean, we operate a fleet of over 3,000 electric vehicles in New York City. That is no small task. And we have the infrastructure across several warehouses in the city to support the maintenance as well as the charging of that entire fleet. So everything that we go into beyond mopeds, and there will be more, we'll have that same operating philosophy.
So electric bikes is basically what you're signaling to us. Electric bikes are the huge win, right?
All I can say is there will be additional products.
What do you think of that Bird scooter that they knocked off of another company where you kind of sit on it? It's kind of like the scooter. What do you call the scooters that Bird uses? The classic Bird scooter is called what? A scooter?
We call that a kick scooter.
Okay. Those kick scooters, they put a seat on it. And then they called it something new. What is that product called? Because that's kind of somewhere between the kick scooter and what you do with a moped. What people would traditionally
call it. I think it's called the cruiser, Jason.
The cruiser?
Yeah.
Is that, what do you think of the cruiser product? Is that the future of all this? Is something that goes in between the two?
I mean, that product, it's not a moped. It's not a motor vehicle. It's just another form of an e-bike. It's not something I'm very bullish on. I know whenever I've ridden one of those, like, I don't know if you guys know the company Wheels.
Yes. I've been on one of those.
You know, I feel a little bit like a, you know, circus ape, going around a circle. Like, it's just not something
that's how I felt too.
I see as the future.
It's a good way to vocalize it. Well, hey, Frank, thank you for joining us today.
I'm excited to,
you know, try one of your mopeds when I'm in one of your cities. If you want to learn more about Revel, go to gorevel.com. We'll put a link in our show notes. But that's it for us today. Inside Transportation, back season 2. We'll see you next week. Take care, everyone.
Take care,
everybody.
Appreciate
it, guys.
Thanks for doing it, Frank.
This episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by Ford Motor Company. built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress. From connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com.